now try to move to a little bit more of a panel type discussion here, and asking the questions of each of our presenters. Come back to George Frisbold. Dr. Frisbold, hopefully you're still on.
Yes, I am.
The question here asks, how does the potential loss in subsidies work with highly erodible lands? How will that be verified? Will it require prior enrollment, and does that include livestock grazing, possibly?
Livestock grazing? I think it would include livestock grazing. I think basically the thing to think about, if you've had to do conservation compliance reporting already because you're in highly erodible lands or you have wetlands in your land, and you've been doing that anyway to qualify for direct payments or countercyclical payments, then basically I think what you're going to have to do is that you're just going to do what you've been doing. So if you've been having to file conservation plans for those things, you're going to have to continue doing it. The main difference is that before you had to do that in order to make sure that you were going to qualify for the direct payments and the countercyclical payments. Now those have gone away. And so you basically have to do I think the same things that you've been doing, and unless they change the rules right now, I would presume that it's going to be pretty much the same as what you have been doing. So I don't think it's going to apply to anybody new, but again, that will look at how the regs are done. And so my guess is that the types of, if you've been having to do reporting for conservation compliance, and there's been inspections and things going on with that, that it's going to pretty much continue the same way, but now just one of the programs that would be affected if you weren't complying would be the crop insurance premium subsidies.
Okay, well, thank you for that explanation. That helps clarify a bit. Dr. Collart, a question for you. What is meant by expanding crop elections for certified producers of organic crops?
Sure. Well, the maximum price for a commodity that it's used to determine the value of insurance coverage is set by the RMA. Then the producers, they choose a percentage of the maximum price. Now, the thing is that for many organic commodities, the maximum price selection doesn't reflect the price premium that growers typically receive for their organic production. So that is why, these farm bill, it's required to expand these price elections for certified organic producers.
Okay, great. Now we've got another question here for Dr. Haynes. George, are there any planned programs that would be specifically targeting veterans under the beginning farmer section of the farm bill, or would those benefits that flow to that group fall basically under existing programs?
Well, that's a great question. I'm waiting for the provisions for that, some of these beginning farmer programs to be written to know that. I think my read at the present time is that they're covered under that beginning farmer language, and if that beginning farmer happens to be a veteran, they'll be one way to qualify for that. But I think there's some probability that some of these funds may be targeted at military veterans specifically, but I don't know of any language that's out there yet that specifies that for any of these programs. And we'll wait and see what the rules look like when they come down.
Thank you for that observation. Dr. Frisbold, a question asks, is the native sod also subject to the highly erodible land subsidy laws?
I believe so. I think, yeah, it isn't one mutually exclusive, for the other. So that is one thing where that's probably a new requirement. And again, how that is, going to be checked, who's going to be doing that, I think that's going to be the new regs developed for that.
Okay, so that's something we'll need to keep track on.
Yes.
And move forward. Dr. Collert, a question asks here regarding the new pilot project for buying unprocessed fruits and vegetables. How will the Secretary of Ag ensure that the pilot program is representative of the U.S.?
Yes, I think this is related to the question that was posted before. And basically what they're going to do is that, you know, they are going to make sure that the pilot program contains states from several regions of the United States, so to ensure that it's going to be representative.
Okay, so follow on that then. Another question asks, how much will producers have to pay for the checkoff program for the Christmas tree aspect of the specialty crop program?
Okay, well, right now they're looking at 15 cents per fresh-cut Christmas trees sold in the United States.
Thank you. Dr. Haynes, what are, in your opinion, questioner asks, what are some of the more important aspects of the changes for the beginning farmer programs under the Farm Bill?
Well, I think there are probably two of them that I think worthwhile keeping your eyes on. One of them is the crop insurance provisions that are in there. I think this premium subsidy is really very substantial for these producers, as well as getting additional, you know, premium benefits from their NAP coverage or their non-insured crop. And then secondly, I'm anxious to take a look at the language that's in for military veterans. It's just a push across the entire federal government for this. I do work with SBA as well, and I just think we'll I'll be surprised, actually, if we don't see some language that's very specific to these military veterans and how we might get them in the farming business.
All right. Excellent. Dr. Frisbold, questioner asks here, who will be responsible for determining compliance with conservation practices for purposes of the cross-linkage with crop insurance?
It's going to be the same people who have been doing, you know, conservation compliance in the past. It's again, if you haven't been doing, you know, conservation plan and conservation plan reporting, this probably isn't going to affect you. So it's pretty much the same, you know, USDA agencies and the same USDA people that you've been dealing with. You know, the way to think about it is, you have to, if you're already in an area and you're required to have certain conservation plans, you probably know it already because you've been doing this. And so the types of things you're going to have to be doing aren't really going to change. The thing is, now that, you know, technically, let's say you were violating conservation compliance, they could take away your direct payments. They could take away your countercyclical payments. Now you could lose, you know, certain, you know, crop insurance subsidy benefits. So who you're going to be interacting with at USDA for, you know, for verification isn't most likely not going to change. So it's kind of like you have to kind of continue doing what you've been doing. It's just that now there's just different types of farm income support. And so what you have to do to qualify for the farm income support hasn't changed. It's the form of the farm income support that's changed. But the conservation, you know, paperwork, compliance, monitoring, that sort of thing is pretty much going to be what it has been. And so whatever your experience with that has been, it's most likely just going to be a continuation of that.
That's a great explanation. Thank you. Dr. Collert, another question here asks, will the National Organic Certification Cost Share Program for all the different states be automatic, or will each state have to apply individually?
Well, from my understanding, each state will have to apply individually to the program. And also, I would like to mention that this is not a competitive grant program, so that's something also to keep in mind.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Haynes, does the Beginning Farmer Rancher Development Program still require significant involvement from nonprofits under the new Farm Bill by your read?
I think that's going to remain. The last thing I read on that, they said that it looked like the provisions from the previous Farm Bill were probably going to be retained for the 2014 Farm Bill regarding the Beginning Farmer Development Program. And so I would suspect that that's
That's probably true, and I think for the one important reason, it was the nonprofits, especially the in the Midwest, that really pushed for this beginning farmer rancher program, and I think they feel like they're heavily vested in making sure this thing proceeds and is successful. So I think that language is going to remain.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Then couple of last questions that come in here, Dr. Collart. One for you asks. Who will be responsible for the enhanced enforcement of the Organic Foods Production Act for 1990?
I am not 100% sure about that right now, so I would not, yes. I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. Well, something else we'll need to kind of keep track as things develop further.
Correct.
All right, and it looks like Dr. Haynes, one last question for you before we close. Do we know, will the matching requirements for the beginning farmer rancher development program be similar to what we had seen in the past for that program under the past legislation?
Well, again, you know, I haven't seen the rules for the new program coming out, and in as much as the people that were lobbying for this program had written as part of their blog that they thought that those rules were going to remain the same. So we'll, again, probably answer that a little bit the same way as I did the last question. We'll have to wait and see, but it appears that the rules may be very much the same as before.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you again for your comments. Thank you all, in fact, three of you, for your very insightful observations and contributions. Today's program would not have been nearly as rich without all the questions also that you were willing to take. So I'd like to move now to a close. Brief summary here. Today's webinar is just one in a series of programs that we're doing highlighting some of the details of the 2014 Farm Bill. Other upcoming webinars that we have planned include on April 7th, Nutrition Title and Food Policy, also covering the research title and highlights there, as well as some observations about changes in the trade policy. And then on April 14th, we have some discussion of the specialty crop programs and economic implications under that, the changes in that section of the Farm Bill, as well as a discussion of food safety and the Farm Bill implications for the new Food Safety Modernization Act that's underway with the USDA. We'd also like to hear from you about other topics or presentations you might like to see offered in future webinars. You're certainly welcome to enter any of those thoughts in the chat pod there on the lower left of your screen. Or if you'd like, you can send us an email at the address on your screen, which is information@farmmanagement.org. As mentioned earlier, the recordings and other information from today's webinar are available at the Ag in Uncertain Times website. Our team has hosted over 100 individual presentations since we began our efforts back in 2009. The URL on your screen, we have posted at that a number of different presentation slide sets, recordings of previous video and audio-only format webinar presentations, as well as links to external resources that may have been mentioned by various speakers, and a companion wiki site if you are interested to take a look. And finally, we have mentioned a number of different URLs and links to different resources throughout today's presentation. In order to provide you with a single reference for that information, we've compiled a PDF file which you may now download using the file share pod that we've put up on the screen. You simply click on the file name that's listed there and then click the Save to My Computer button at the bottom to download the file to your own desktop. Let me close now by again extending our thanks to all of today's speakers for their first-class presentation covering conservation, horticulture, and specialty crops, as well as the beginning farmer programs. We also want to make a special thank you to our many sponsors for their help in making this webinar series possible. Thanks also to our Ag in Uncertain Times team and their sponsoring institutions for their support for producing this program. We'd also like to thank all of you, the participants in today's webinar conference. We sincerely hope that you find today's content of value in your work. We hope to see you again in one of our upcoming programs, and until then, we offer you our sincerest hope for success in meeting the challenges of today's uncertain times. Until then, and for Ag in Uncertain Times, I'm John Hewlett.